Here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
This is gonna be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening, hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everyone, to the Sports Report for this week. I'm Packer Dave. Glad to be with you. A lot on tap for the show today. We're going to be talking Rams football later in the program with Jay Paris, author out of Los Angeles. Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting went to Hallis Hall. We'll talk about the Bears and the Browns this week. The Browns trying to get a win, and their best for the first one for 2017, their best shot is the Bears this week. John Poulter, our professor of sports, will join us later in the program from Toronto, talking hockey and a little bit of soccer later in the show. But the Packers and the Vikings this Saturday night at 7:30 is a meaningless game to Green Bay. The Vikings are jockeying for playoff position, so they're going to give it their best effort. They tried hard this year, and we got to give them a little credit for that. But, not quite enough in Green Bay. When Aaron Rodgers went down, Brett Hundley came in. We lost the Vikings game, the Lions game. We lost a whole bunch right in a row. And then we did all right against the Bears, 1-1, dropped a tough one to Pittsburgh, won a couple overtime games, Tampa and Cleveland. But last week, Aaron Rodgers came back. He probably shouldn't have. They put him on injured reserve when the Packers were eliminated from the playoffs. He played well, but he could not throw the deep ball. Nonetheless, Packers were in the game up until the end, the last drive. After three turnovers, they move the ball all the way down to about the 30-yard line. Geronimo Allison takes in a pass at the 25, takes a couple steps. The ball is knocked out of his hands, and the season goes down and crashes around us. Too bad for Geronimo Allison. But he flushed our season down the toilet that clock. Now, who knows if we would actually score a touchdown there, but the chances were nil once Geronimo Allison dropped the ball, literally. A lot of people are blaming Dom Capers here, but with four turnovers in a game, you can't really fault the defensive coordinator, but he will be under the microscope these next 2 weeks, and we'll see what the Packers do with him at the end of the year. But Brett Hundley is going to be starting against the Vikings this week, and let's hear from Hundley. He talks about what's happened this season and now another chance to show what he's got. Here's Brett Hundley.
Just trying to get a victory and do the best I can and put this team in the best position to win the game. So,
does the future come up with you at all until you get the audition next 2 weeks?
I'm trying to play and win this game. What happens? There's no point to look and or worry about what's going to happen in the future, because if you do that, you miss what's happening now. So, for me, I'm just trying to make the most of this opportunity, win this game, and worry about next week after this.
Brett, what was that last week like? I mean, you have the 7 games where you're the guy, and then you take a step back and have a different role. Did you see it any differently, and can that benefit you at all this week?
I mean, it's hard to play and then sit back again, but I like to think of it as a nice little bye week. So back in it and got another opportunity.
Packers leading tackler Blake Martinez talks about what's in store for the next couple games and what the Packers are trying to do.
Going into this week, you kind of look at it as, hey, we're not going to the playoffs. We don't have no way winning these next 2 games are going to get us there. But I think us as professionals, we have that competitive nature that anytime we step on the field, we want to go out there and win, whether it's one-on-one matchups or whether it's the game in general. And that's our plan.
Even without the stakes, the average football career isn't that long. Season's only 16 games. Does it give a value to every opportunity?
No, 100%. I think any moment you step on the field, you get better. And I think that's where you kind of look at this and, hey, how can I get that much better moving forward, moving into next year? Hey, what can I improve on right now in these live actual games against two really good teams? that will help me propel myself moving forward.
You talked about those two teams. They also defeated you guys earlier in the year. Does that give you a little extra kind of motivation going into the week that you don't want your division rivals to sweep you in the season?
Yeah. No, yeah, I think everyone has those motivation things behind it, whether it's winning the game in general, whether it's division opponents, whether it's, I don't know, playing a spoiler, whether it's whatever you want to call it. Everyone's going to have those little motivation factors that lead into a game. But at the end of the day, I think for us, it's a division game. It's an important game. It's the next game, and we want to keep going 1-0 and have that mentality for us this season.
So a lot coming up on the program. The Packers and the Vikings, the Bears and the Browns, and a lot more on the Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. Stick with us.
Have you ever been turned down because of bad credit? Don't let your dreams disappear. Just call us at National Credit Advisor today and see how much we can help boost your credit score. We've helped thousands repair their credit so they can finally start qualifying for the purchases they've been dreaming about. Stop being held back from getting the things you want. Call 800-605-3081 to see how much we can help your credit score no matter how bad it is. Call now, 800-605-3081. That's 800-605-3081.
For 50 years, I have been in charge of Christmas. I've jingled your bells and I've roasted your chestnuts. This Christmas, you goons can just rump-a-pum-pum without me.
Hello again, everyone. This is yours truly. That's right, Albert Cosell back again. The mind clear, the body agile, talking the likes of Pack-a-Dave. Pack-a-Dave, it's time to get over it. That's right. Meredith was right, Pack-a-Dave. The Green Bay Packers were lucky. That's right. And yours truly is here once again to tell it like it is. Even though I say the greatness of Vincent T. Lombardi and Fordham U and the seven blocks of granite were the greatest team of all time.
That could be. And how are the Packers lucky? They don't get to make the playoffs. Their quarterback's injured. I think it's a lack of luck. I am Packer Dave. It is the Sports Report. Now let's bring in Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting. He goes to Hallis Hall each week and gets midweek audio from the Bears. And Steve, this what do you got? About two more weeks of John Fox, and then it's all over?
Well, I would say that's what the scuttlebutt says, is that John Fox isn't going to survive the season.
Well, you know, they had a good win against Cincinnati, and I thought maybe if he followed it up with a couple good performances that he might, you know, have a chance. But their game against Detroit last week was pretty lackluster. And so, I don't know, I think you will probably be one of the several coaches who will be shown the door.
Do you realize that the Bears are the four wins? Three of them came against Pittsburgh, Carolina, and Baltimore. All teams with winning records.
Yeah, well, at least they won some games. Okay, so what's the mood there at Hallis Hall right now as the season winds down?
Well, I tell you, the size of the press corps has definitely shrunk. And I was looking for our good friend Dion Miller. She's on vacation or they're starting to rethink her assignments. But she was not there when I was there last Wednesday at Hallis Hall.
Well, you know, they're out of playoff contention, have been for a while. And there are other sports going on in Chicago that need attention. So I can see why that would be the case. All right. Well, let's hear from John Fox. He talks about the Cleveland Browns, who are the opponent this week for the Bears. The Browns are looking for their first win of the 2017 season. They almost had it against Green Bay in Cleveland, but Green Bay won in overtime, and they lost last week, so they've got two more shots to get a win, or else they join the Detroit Lions as the only 0-16 teams. So there's some incentive for the Browns against the Bears this week. Here Coach John Fox talks about their number one draft pick, Myles Garrett, on the defensive line, and quarterback DeShone Kizer.
Tremendous player, tremendous talent. You know, his skill set, you know, I think most people probably had him, if not one, you know, in the top three on their draft boards. But he's a tremendous talent, and, you know, you can see that on tape. Well, just his athleticism, his length. You know, he's got good playing strength for the speed and athleticism he has. So our guys will definitely know where he is. Well, he's got, you know, a lot of the measurables. He's got good athleticism. He can make all the throws. You see evidence of that on tape. You know, I think he seems to operate what they're doing. I mean, they've got some read options. So they utilize him both as a ball carrier as well as a passer. You know, again, he's a young quarterback, you know, learning this league.
Bears quarterback Mitch Trubisky comments on the Browns defense, Myles Garrett in particular, and running the offense against the Browns.
Yeah, he's a really good player. He's a really good pass rusher, comes off the edge, plays with a lot of energy, and he's really freaky. So we just got to do what we do on offense from a protection standpoint and just play our game and try to tire him out and, yeah, just do what we do up front. I trust my guys, and I feel like we're going to do a good job with them and the rest of the D-line. So we give them the respect they deserve. They got a good pass rush, and they're solid on defense. So we just got to come out and execute our plays.
All right, Steve, now let's turn our attention to the Packers and the Vikings. Coach Mike Zimmer having a great season with his team, and he comments on staying focused as they play the Packers, who are out of the playoffs.
They know that they're out of the playoffs, but I don't think that's a big factor. It's a division game. We have a lot to play for, and it's important that we go out and really what I talked to him about was, two weeks ago we lost, and we had a new sense of urgency and a new focus, and that's what we need to do again. Just because we won this last week doesn't mean, okay, we can go back to how we were and end up getting beat. So we're just trying to just stay on point with everything we do and continue to move forward and continue to try to get wins.
And as you mentioned, this game might have had a lot more relevance if not for the loss of Aaron Rodgers and not being able to win their last game.
The Patriots came away with a big win last week against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And a big part of that was Rob Gronkowski, their spectacular tight end. Bill Belichick, coach of the Patriots, talks about what makes him such a special player.
Well, I think Rob's seen a lot of different coverages, seen a lot of different looks, ways that people try to defend him. And I think as any player like that sees more of those things, he learns how to deal with them. Things that specifically apply to him, same thing Matt Slater deals with on. You see five or six different things that everybody else doesn't see. They see what they normally see. Those guys see different things. And I think Rob's seen every different way you can cover him from an inside or an outside position based on his style of play, the way teams try to play him. And so you learn how to deal with those. That's certainly something that experience teaches you, because there's a certain point in your career where you don't deal with those things, but as you build up and have success and different teams use different techniques or schemes, you have to figure out how to deal with them, or they can take you out of being a productive player.
You know, Gronk racks up wide receiver type yardage.
Okay, and Saints quarterback Drew Brees, he comments on the importance of their home crowd as they play the Atlanta Falcons.
Our guys get off the field and we get the ball back, where you knock them out of field goal range because, we were able to get off the ball and get a sack and, whatever it might be. I mean, that can be a huge determining factor in the game. So we love that. We know our fans are all about that. So we need the Houdat Nation out in full force. As ruckus as they can be.
That, for my money, Dave, looks like to be the best game of the weekend. Those games between Atlanta and New Orleans have been shootouts recently. And, Brees is having a great season. Atlanta, they're having a good season, too. So that's going to obviously be almost like a playoff game.
Okay, a surprising team in the National Football League this year is the Los Angeles Rams. And now we bring in the author of the book, Game of My Life, Rams, Memorable Stories of Rams Football. He is Jay Paris. Jay, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Okay, now, Jay, first tell us a bit about the book, and then we're going to talk about the Rams as they are in 2017. But first, tell us a bit about the book.
Sure, it's called Game of My Life, Rams, and 20 Ram Legends, everybody from Roman Gabriel to Tom Mack to Vinnie Ferragamo and Eric Dickerson and Jack Youngblood. They all pick their the game that sticks out after all these years. And a lot of them pick some big highlights. Of course, Kurt Warner winning the Super Bowl in 2000, the only Super Bowl the Rams have won. But some guys pick some heartbreak games. Tom Mack mentions a 1974 Minnesota Vikings playoff loss, and other guys pick games where maybe they weren't their best, but it still has an impact all these years. So we let them pick the game. They gave me a couple other good stories that round out the chapter, and it's been real well received in L.A. It's available not only on Amazon, but in the Rams team store. So we're all excited about that.
All right. If you get a book in the team store, you're doing real well. And Steve, you're actually going out there for the holidays, right?
I'm going out to California. I'm not going to go see any NFL, but I will be going to the Rose Bowl to see the Georgia Oklahoma game. But I was going to tell our guest, I had two friends growing up. They were twin brothers, and one of them was a Rams fan, and the other one was a Vikings fan. And this is back in the day of the Purple People Eaters and the Fearsome Foursome. And believe me, they had a lot of verbal sparring going back and forth between those two brothers, and they were twins. So you can imagine the dynamic there.
Boy, there were a lot of heartbreak losses on the frozen tundra at the old Met Stadium in Minnesota, that's for sure. It seemed like every year it was the Vikings-Rams or Cowboys-Rams squaring off in the playoffs, and boy, what classic games those were.
All right, Jay, now you mentioned Kurt Warner. I was actually at that Super Bowl, and I covered it, and that was in Atlanta.
Right.
And so, you know, you had the Rams moving to St. Louis and then moving back from St. Louis to Los Angeles. What do you think about all this team shifting before we get into this year's Rams?
You know, the Rams are in that 71-year history. Their better names might be the Gypsies. I mean, they're the only franchise to win three titles in three different cities, 1945 in Cleveland, 1951 in Los Angeles, and of course 1999 with St. Louis. So, you know, I'm kind of old school. I'd like to see the team stay right where they are. The NFL certainly has had three teams move in the last 17 or 18 months. That's not really their model, but you know, they're chasing that money in the new stadiums as well. So I wish the Rams would have never left. And again, there's probably somebody in Cleveland saying the same thing in 1945.
Absolutely. And you know, there's one team that cannot be moved, and you know which one it is, don't you?
Yeah, I know where you're going with this one, and I wish every team was like that. I've seen a game at Lambeau Field, my favorite place, to tell you the truth.
They can't move the team because it's too much cattle and too much freight to move that team.
It's owned by the city, that's why. All right, so this year you've got Jared Goff, and you've got Todd Gurley, and just a great lineup. You know,
Sammy
they went out
Watkins, got, Robert Woods.
Yeah, they went out and got themselves some good receivers, and quite the turnaround from last year. Is it all to do with the coach, or more the players, or what's your reasoning for the great turnaround for the Rams?
Boy, you know, just like when things aren't going well, there's fingerprints from a lot of different people. And when things are going well, you know, it's more than one thing. But I think the things that jump out is Sean McVay and him coming over as the new head coach, replacing Jeff Fisher. Yes, he's 31 years old. Yes, he looks about 25. But once he opens his mouth, I mean, he is a bright light. And you can certainly see why the Rams jumped on him and made him the youngest NFL coach. His grandfather, John McVay, of course, built all those great San Francisco 49er teams with Joe Montana and Bill Walsh. So McVay's sharp as he can come. So you got that on the coaching side. I think what was really smart, fellas, was that he kept John Fossil, the interim coach, great special teams guy. But a lot of interim coaches usually see the door when the new guy comes in. He didn't do that. And more importantly, he hired Wade Phillips. 70 years old, his 40th NFL season. There's not a lot Wade Phillips hasn't seen or experienced. So you've got that great coaching staff. Then they went about fixing that offensive line. Andrew Whitworth, left tackle, John Campbell, center. They have had the same five offensive linemen all season long. That is so rare in the NFL. You mentioned Goff. You mentioned Gurley. Those guys are 23 years old. You mentioned Sammy Watkins, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp. All those guys are 25 years or younger. Jump on the other side of the ball with Aaron Donald. Probably not a better defensive tackle in the entire league. Put that with Robert Quinn, rushing the passer, decent secondary. Then you go to special teams, your third phase, probably one of the best special teams units in the league. Although Greg Zuerlein, their great kicker, has a herniated disc. He won't be available for the playoffs. That's a huge blow. But I think it's just the new energy. And it's more offensive friendly. And that's why they could go from 4-12 to 12-4 in 1 year.
Awesome. Okay, Jay Paris is with us. He wrote the book Game of My Life Rams, Memorable Stories of Rams Football. It's available at Amazon.com and also in the Rams Pro Shop, where the Rams play. Okay, Jay, now, Jay, the Rams just tore apart the Seattle Seahawks last week. I don't think anybody was expecting a win like that, and that margin. How did the Rams just manhandle Seattle that way last week?
You know, I think they showed glimpses of it when they barely lost to the Seahawks earlier in the year, a touchdown pass to Cooper Kupp went off his fingertips. I just think they're better. And the Seahawks were dinged up with Sherman and Chancellor out, but open any locker room in mid-December, you're going to find a team that's wounded. So I think they're not scared of the Seahawks anymore. And, you know, that Seahawks swagger, that was knocked out quickly. There's only been four teams who've scored 40-plus points in CenturyLink Field, and the Rams did it with ease. I mean, they were up 40-0. They sacked Russell Wilson seven times. So not only was that a win, it was almost like a passing of the torch. I mean, you never see Seahawks fans streaming out for the exits early in the fourth quarter, and it was like a fire drill. And some are wondering if this is the end of the era of Pete Carroll and that great run he's had up there. We'll see about that. But some wins have more significance, and that one certainly did Sunday for the Rams going forward. And another good point, they haven't lost two games in a row all year, so they've shown that resiliency. They've shown they've been able to bounce back. And even the games they've lost, those have been tough games as well to the Vikings and guys like that. So they've played their best against some of the better teams in the NFL. And, you know, yes, they're young. They're the second youngest team in the NFL. So you just imagine they've got all that talent, they've got all that fresh legs, and now they got a big dose of confidence after what they did up there in Seattle to the Seahawks.
Oh, Dave and I couldn't be happier if Pete Carroll gets shown the door up in Seattle, right, Dave?
Never been a big fan.
I'm a UCLA guy, so that's fine with me too.
Well, you know, Seattle, and I've heard a couple people say this, analysts like Ray Lewis on Inside the NFL and a few other guys, Deion Sanders. Seahawks have not been the same since they threw that pass in the Super Bowl that was intercepted by Malcolm Butler and just blew the game and gave it to the Patriots. Ever since then, yeah, they've been in the playoffs, but they haven't gone deep. And this year, it looks like they probably won't. I think the NFC is going to be the teams that are in the lead right now. You know, the Falcons, the Carolina Panthers, Saints,
right?
Rams, Eagles. I don't think any of those 8-6 teams are going to find their way in to the playoffs. So now, what about your game of the Rams and the Titans this week? Tennessee's hungry, of course. They're still in the playoff hunt at 8-6. So what about that one?
You know, that's a great matchup. I think they get after Mariota. He's been up and down all year. Can they stop the running game? That's really what the Titans are going to hang their hat on. But you got to look at the other side of the ball. I mean, Jared Goff wasn't that great the other day. He threw for like 150 yards, but they still won. So, you know, I think the Goff gets loose, but Todd Gurley, I think, you know, they'll try to play their own brand of smash mouth, see how that works. I kind of glossed over the year, and you know, he's closing on 1,200 rushing yards, 17 touchdowns, catching everything out of the backfield. So the Rams have proven they can win on the road. They certainly did that last week in Seattle. Tennessee is going to be a tough test, and it's a physical test. You know, there's not going to be much warm and fuzzy on that field. You know, that's going to be a hard-nosed game. I like the Rams in it, but like you said, the Titans need it. You know, you can make the same argument for the Rams. They got a chance to clinch their first NFC West title since 2004. That's a long time ago.
All right. Well, good for the Rams. The book is called Game of My Life Rams, Memorable Stories of Rams Football. And, Jay, we're going to have you on a bit next week also on the show just to talk more about the book and what's inside the book and the players and, you know, more specifics on the book, because Rams are really doing well this year, and it's good to see him back in L.A. and having success. Jay Paris, we appreciate it. You have a good one, and you have a wonderful Christmas, my friend.
Hey, same to you guys. And, boy, I sure appreciate you having me on. I'm really honored, and it was a thrill to be with you guys. Take care now.
He's honored. Does he really know what this show's all about?
He obviously does not. Okay, thanks a lot, Jay. And coming up on the show, a lot more. Our professor of sports, John Poulter, talking NHL hockey. When we return, it is the Sports Report.
You know, sometimes when you compare prices on products, you think to yourself, what difference does it make? The rates are all about the same anyway. But sometimes the rates are very different. Let me give you an example where there's a huge difference in pricing between companies. Vehicle protection plans. Look, if your car is 4 years or older, having a vehicle protection plan is a no-brainer. The trick is not to overpay for it. Here are the facts. The average price of a vehicle protection plan is $2,800, while the price of a TOCO warranty vehicle protection plan for most vehicles is just $1,500. The average down payment on a vehicle protection plan is $299. With TOCO warranty, there's no down payment. The average monthly payment on a vehicle protection plan is more than $160 a month. With TOCO, the average monthly payment is just $49. To get a highly rated vehicle protection plan at a great low rate, call TOCO Warranty at 1-800-987-3157. That's 1-800-987-3157. Terms and conditions apply.
Peter, tomorrow's Christmas Eve and you still haven't gotten us a tree.
Lois, I told you, I'm on Dipsalicious vacation. What part of that don't you understand?
Hey, Packer Day, Bill Raftery here. Let's talk a little basketball. Get away from that football. This is where the real men are.
That's true. It's Final Four just a few months away, you know. And that's in that case, the Badgers in Wisconsin always find their way to have a good season and wind up deep in the Final Four tourney. We'll see what happens this year. Steve, what about the Badgers this year?
Hey, we don't need no stinking Badgers.
No, but what about them as a team? Do you think that they're going to do as well as they have in, say, recent years?
There's no reason not to believe that. You know, they've got a pretty good squad usually, well coached, and that's what makes a big difference. Also playing in a competitive league.
Yeah, of course. College basketball, the coach makes a huge difference.
Well, Dave, I did a little quick checking here, and the Badgers, they're off to a 5-7 start as we're taping the show. Now, in college basketball, teams aren't afraid of playing high-quality opponents, so they've played a few games against top 25 teams like Xavier, Baylor, and UCLA, and even Virginia, and they've lost those games. So even though they're not off to a good start, they're now getting into Big Ten play, and maybe they'll bring it around. They're certainly a well-coached team.
I think as much as anywhere else in sports, college basketball. But talking about other sports, let's go to Toronto, Ontario, and our professor of sports, John Poulter. John, welcome to the show today.
Dave, always good to be with you.
All right, Steve, say hello to your friend John.
And this is a part of the show that I always look forward to. After we sort of work our way through the hockey, we get to talk a little soccer. Yes.
It's always a nice spot, isn't it, Steve? And one of these days, we're going to educate Dave. And we're going to sit him down and we're going to have him watch a game and we're going to have him appreciate just what a great sport it is.
This is the thing, John. You know, I concentrate so heavily on the NFL that it leaves no time for, you know, maybe a little bit of basketball. I know the NFL. I kind of know the NBA. And the rest I have to rely on guys like you and Steve.
Yeah, well, that's due to the limited brain capacity. But, you know, that's a learnable skill.
All right, John, let's look at the National Hockey League right now. And we always like to bring up the Blackhawks because the show originates in Chicago. So let's start with the Blackhawks and then move on to some other teams that you think are in need of attention right now.
Well, the Blackhawks are starting to play good hockey. All of a sudden, we're sitting there looking at them still 7 points behind Nashville and St. Louis, who are tied at the top of that division with 46 points. Good news for the Blackhawks is they finally found that winning streak that they needed. They've won five in a row. They're playing good hockey. They're starting to close that gap. Whether they have enough time left to close it simply because of the number of teams that are ahead of them in that central division, being Nashville, St. Louis, and Winnipeg, is another story. But if the season ended today, the Blackhawks would be in a wild card position in terms of the postseason activity. Still lots of time to go. We all know that Chicago will do something around the trade deadline to strengthen that team, as Steve has alluded to in previous conversations. So let's hope that that continues. What Chicago needs to do, though, is to continue this strong play that they've had of late. Obviously, they're not going to continue winning five in a row every time, but got to do a lot better than they did earlier in the season when they let St. Louis and Nashville gain quite a bit of ground on them, which is going to be extremely tough to catch up.
Yeah, the Blackhawks, seems like they do this a lot. They'll start out of the chute a little slow, maybe win some games, hit a road bump, and then all of a sudden pick it up again, although usually that's pretty late in the season when that occurs.
Yes, it is. Perhaps the other surprise this year in the Western Conference is, and Dave has alluded to this in the past, is the strong play of the expansion Vegas Golden Knights. And fortunately for the Blackhawks, they're in the other Western Conference division. They're in the Pacific division, so the Blackhawks don't have to worry about them in terms of a playoff spot, unless it becomes a wild card situation. But certainly the Blackhawks got a lot of work to do ahead of them. Can't afford to go into another slump. Got to start playing 600 hockey or better, because I work on the basis that it usually takes a minimum of 90 points. And in the last couple of years, it's 94 or 95 to get into the postseason. And the Blackhawks are going to have to pick up their paces to get to those levels.
Okay, let's talk about the Golden Knights. Why are they so successful so early?
Well, I think it's a number of things, Dave. Let's not take the fan base into this, because clearly the fan base, other than perhaps providing some encouragement and an atmosphere for the players to play in, doesn't really have an effect. But what did have an effect was the way that the league structured the expansion draft. And with Vegas being the only team that came in, they had a lot of time to do a lot of research. They knew for a couple of years before they actually came into the league that they were going to have a team. So they had a chance to hire good front office personnel, good coaching personnel, solid ownership, nice arena, all of the things that you need to be successful in the NHL. But I think the key thing was the way that the expansion draft was structured by the NHL, and that was that every team, every one of the existing 30 teams, had to give up one player. And the protected lists were fairly short and fairly small in terms of the quality and numbers of players that could be protected. And, of course, any player with a no-trade or no-movement clause with his existing team had to be protected. So given the number of no-trade, no-movement clauses that are around in the game today, that sort of spoke for a fair number of the protected spots on each of the existing team's rosters. So bottom line was that made an awful lot of good quality players available to Vegas in terms of who they were selecting. They weren't competing with another team in terms of picking up players. So if you looked at an example, Pittsburgh's roster, and you saw that Pittsburgh had four good players that you liked that were not protected, you had your pick of one of those four players. You didn't have to worry about being beaten to the punch by another expansion team. So good work all around in terms of the way Vegas came in. The league thought about it. They didn't want another doormat for an expansion team. Far too many teams in most sports we've seen an expansion team be a doormat from the standpoint that they've got the players that nobody else wanted. In Vegas's situation, they got a lot of good players that other teams would have liked to have held on to. And I think that's, apart from good management and good coaching, quite frankly, I think that's been the big secret to their success.
Well, I'm sure also, if you think about it, you know, when there's an expansion team, it isn't always in the best market. So perhaps these players go, well, yeah, I'd be more than happy to go play in Las Vegas. One, their arena is very nice. I've been in that arena, not for hockey. I saw a college basketball doubleheader there in 2016. And then my other question is, so who are their best players?
I guess the two best players, in my opinion, are James Neal, who's had a tremendous amount of success as a scorer in a number of years over the NHL, in the NHL, most recently with Pittsburgh and Nashville. And I guess Marc-Andre Fleury is the big name, the star goaltender, three-time Stanley Cup winner with Pittsburgh. His number had just run out in Pittsburgh. He became very expensive. They had a younger, cheaper, just as talented goalie in Matt Murray. So it became a fairly easy decision for Pittsburgh. They could only protect one goalie, and Fleury was the guy that they decided that they could afford to let go. And any strong team starts with strong goaltending, much like quarterbacks in football and starting pitching in baseball. If you don't have a good quarterback and you don't have good starting pitching, you're generally not a good team. And the same goes for hockey. If you've got weak goaltending, don't expect to be competing.
Okay, John Poulter with us, our professor of sports from Toronto. And, of course, you cover the Maple Leafs for us in Toronto. So, John, let's talk about your team out there in Toronto.
Well, they've been struggling a little bit of late. Lost four out of their last five. Spent a lot of the month of December on the road. I believe they had three games in the month of December. Sitting second in the Atlantic Division behind the surprising, perhaps not surprising, Tampa Bay Lightning. Problem there is that while they're 7 points behind the Lightning, which doesn't sound like an awful lot of space to catch up, they have played three more games than the Lightning. The Leafs, having played 36 games, along with St. Louis, the two teams that have played the most games in the NHL. So a little bit of an uneven schedule. Obviously, by the time we get to the end of the season, that will even up. Good news is that it gives them a chance to rest some of their stars, gives them a chance to rest some of their injured players and get them healthy again. Bad news is it's games already off the schedule that you can't do anything about. But certainly from what we've seen in this town in the last 50 years from our NHL team, we're all very happy with the progress that the Leafs are making when you look at it from a fan standpoint.
So, John, the Canadians are kind of the New York Yankees of hockey. You know, what have they done in recent memory? I don't certainly recall seeing their names in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Well, the Canadians have been struggling for the last few years, Steve. Biggest trouble they have this year is scoring goals. For the last few years, their best player far and away has been their goaltender, Carey Price. Unfortunately, Carey Price has become a little bit brittle over the last few years, and he's missed, I wouldn't say as many games as he's played, but he's missed an awful lot of games. And certainly when you're relying on a player such as Price to be a good goaltender and to be the backstop of your team, you can't afford to have him out of the lineup. And, you know, now they've got other issues. Shea Weber, the top quality, the defenseman that they got from Nashville in that one-for-one swap with P.K. Subban, he's now got a foot injury. They've decided to shut him down for a little while. They really don't know what the injury is, other than the fact that it's there and it's recurring and they can't seem to get it better. So that's not going to help a team that doesn't score a lot of goals when you've got a goalie that's a little bit brittle and your best defenseman that's injured. Basically, what's happened, Steve, is in this cap era, the rest of the league has caught up with Montreal. And, you know, they used to always attract good players because of the tradition, much the same as the Yankees and the Dodgers do and the Lakers do in basketball. But recently, it's just not been that way. And they're in a tough division. They're making some progress. They're 500 hockey, 15-15-4 from 34 games. So they're making some progress. But once again, that's a tough division. And Tampa's playing so well, they're going to be hard to catch.
Yeah, well, that was going to be my follow-up, is how the salary cap affects all this, because I know the Blackhawks, every time they've won a championship, basically had to shave the roster because players were going to become free agents or they were going to become unaffordable, and naturally they got plucked off by other teams.
Yeah, that's always been an issue with Chicago since we got into this Kane and Taves era and the salary cap era. And the Blackhawks have always been a max cap team. But on the other hand, the New York Rangers have always been a max cap team. And, you know, look at where they have been in recent years and look at where they are in today's standings. They're not doing all that well. So it's not just a question of whether the cap is a factor here. Certainly the cap is a huge factor in terms of Chicago and the Rangers and several other teams. But I think what has been the difference here is the fact that Stan Bowman and his team in the front office in Chicago have been able to go out and find those lower draft picks, those college hockey players, those European hockey players that have come in and have not missed a beat and picked up the pace and are, of course, are coming in at entry-level contracts, which when you're looking at the money that they're paying to guys like Seabrook and Tane and Caves and Duncan Keith and Corey Crawford, you've got to balance that off with some very high-end talent at the low end of the payroll, and I think Bowman has done an excellent job of doing that, and that's what's kept the Blackhawks in the race all these years.
John Poulter with us from Toronto. Okay, Steve, let's move on to soccer.
All right, John. You know, this is a big weekend in English soccer, of course. Maybe you can explain to our listeners the tradition of the Boxing Day games.
Well, it's a long-standing tradition, Steve, and this year, because of the way that the calendar falls, i.e. the holiday season in Britain, the Christmas season, falls on a Monday, and the fact that games are normally Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and then, of course, you mentioned the Boxing Day game, which is the 26th of December and is a long-standing tradition in English soccer. We've got a very busy schedule over the next 2 weeks, and if you go 2 weeks from today, which takes you to Thursday, January the 4th, each team in the Premier League will play four games, and for the most part, that will be two home games and two away games, and that will take a big chunk out of the questions of who is in, who is out. It'll probably separate the men from the boys a little bit more. Looking at this upcoming weekend, there's some pretty key games.
Starting Friday.
Well, yeah, Friday. We've got Arsenal and Liverpool, which is always a good game from a traditional standpoint. Doesn't really matter where the teams are in the standings. It's much like the Bears and the Packers, depending on who's good and who's bad, or whether they're both good or whether they're both bad. That's always a classic encounter. Arsenal and Liverpool is much the same way. Then on Saturday, we've got some key games, perhaps for the wrong reasons. We've got Swansea and Crystal Palace, two teams that have not done very well this season. West Ham and Newcastle, another two teams that are borderline relegation or on the relegation zone. And then we've got two pretty interesting games in Burnley and Spurs, who are currently sitting sixth and seventh in the Premier League. They're playing in Burnley on Saturday. And then on later in the day on Saturday, game between Leicester City and Manchester United in Leicester is going to be an interesting game, because Leicester have really picked up the paces after starting off very slowly and firing their manager. They're now sitting in eighth place. So they're starting to put some pressure on that, what let's call it the top seven. Maybe the second six is perhaps the best way to describe it, because Manchester City are sort of out there on their own. And then we've got that little cluster below them, of which Leicester City is part. So we got some good games coming up. Then we get into the Boxing Day matches, which are Tuesday, and I believe there's a game spills over to Wednesday, and I think there's another game, Crystal Palace and Arsenal, a London Derby, plays on Thursday. Then we get into the next Saturday, which is the New Year's Eve weekend, and then, of course, we get through to the 4th of January before we take a break for a week for the third round of the FA Cup. So lots of activity for these teams. We're going to find out which teams are good and strong in terms of their depth and the quality of their depth, because no team can play all of their best 11 players for all four of those games. And then that first weekend in January, the 6th, 7th, and 8th, we've got the FA Cup third round, which is where the big boys, including the Premiership guys, all come into the tournament. So even though it's an off week in terms of the Premier League, that first weekend in January, all of the teams are going to be in action. So we're going to find out now who's got the best depth, who is in the best condition, and who is going to come out of this situation over the next four games, which will put us past the halfway mark. Every team has played 18 games at this point, and it's a 38-game season, so we are literally at the halfway mark after this weekend's game. So it should be very interesting to see how that works out.
And, John, how about a tip of the cap to Wayne Rooney, who's basically, seems to me, single-handedly taken Everton out of the basement, out of the relegation zone, and brought him back into relevancy?
Well, certainly on the field, he would be the answer to that question, Steve. I believe that the appointment of Sam Allardyce as manager is probably a big factor as well. Allardyce is very old school. He's very demanding. He is very much, I'm the manager, you will do what I do. He's very strict disciplinarian. He's very much a Vince Lombardi type, although not having the success in terms of championships that Lombardi had, but certainly in terms of the way he commands respect from his players. He has made a career out of taking teams that looked like they were threatened with relegation and turning them around, and eventually wearing out his welcome because of his abrasive style, but certainly was what Everton needed in this situation. When he took over a few weeks ago, they were sitting down around 16th or 17th, almost dropping into the relegation zone, and now we're looking at them sitting, not comfortably, but relatively better in 8th place, or in 9th place. Leicester City is 8th. Everton sitting after 18 games with 7 wins, 4 draws, and 7 losses, and certainly playing a lot better soccer. And perhaps Wayne Rooney going home to Everton, where he started his career, where he grew up within a stone's throw of Goodison Park, the home field of Everton for many, many years, has to be a big piece of it on the field, as you mentioned.
John Poulter from Toronto, thanks very much again this week, and we will do it next week. We always appreciate it, John. You take care and have a great Christmas.
My pleasure as always, guys. Merry Christmas to you and happy holidays to those that don't support Christmas.
All right. And we want to thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Sports Report. Remember, you can catch us at kwwradio.com and internetfm.com. New shows posted every Thursday for your listening pleasure. So for Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting in Chicago, for John Poulter, our professor of sports from Toronto, and for Jay Paris from Los Angeles, I'm Packer Dave saying thanks a lot for listening. Take care. Have a good one. Merry Christmas, everybody. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Get the bears, scumbag.
Goodbye.
Tell you what, Dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt. Pucker up, Buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, Fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless. I ought to club them and eat their bones.
Goodbye.
Now you ladies, carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.